Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of It's Crime Time. I was searching for cases that would be fitting for the holiday, since it's America's Independence Day, or July 4th, as most people call it, and I came across this case of Sue and Melinda Marshall, which I had never heard of for some reason, so I began to research and decided to do this case as the murders occurred on July 4th. All right, everyone, it's crime time. Sue Marshall was born in Wayne City in southern Illinois in Wayne County. Not much is mentioned about her childhood, but she grew up here. She had worked in healthcare mostly, but was primarily a homemaker due to her severe asthma, which sometimes required oxygen. Sue had been married 5 times from what I could find, and she met a man named Johnny Marshall, who had been her second husband, and they married in 1974, having 2 children together, Michael and Melinda. Michael would have been born around 1975, and Melinda was born in 1981. But after 11 years together, Sue and Johnny divorced. It was said that Sue really struggled with this divorce. She struggled pretty bad in terms of depression, and she apparently had a drug addiction. But later, she went to seek solace at a local church that she became involved in, and this apparently greatly helped her get her life together at this time in terms of her depression and supposedly her drug addiction. She later went on to marry Jim Gelsinger, but this did not work out either. And then later in around 92 or 93, she met Niels Nielsen. In 1992, Niels had been caught in Utah with receiving stolen property, and he was not to leave the state, but he had left to go to Illinois to move in with his stepfather and his mother. When he met Sue, there was actually a warrant out for his arrest in Utah, but she was unaware of this at the time. And they became married. They married in 1993, and this time Sue was 36 years old and Niels was 20 years old. Their marriage only lasted about 10 days because Sue found out about this warrant and she had contacted the authorities. So she had the marriage later annulled, and Illinois authorities picked up Niels at his parents' trailer and they extradited him back to Utah. Now, it's not exactly listed how long Niels served prison time for, but I'm going to assume it was around 2 years or, you know, almost 2 years, because then in 1995, he got out of prison and in Utah, and he returned to his parents' home back to Illinois to live there. And he and Sue had begun seeing each other again. At this time, Sue was 38 years old and her daughter Melinda was 13. And here's some quick information about Melinda. Melinda was considered to be a good student at Wayne City Junior High. She played basketball. She was often called Mindy for short. She was a normal kid like anyone else and described as being really beautiful with long blonde hair. And anyway, it has been noted that the 4th of July celebrations in this area are some of the funnest times of the whole year, with fireworks displays for the public all over, families having cookouts, which this kind of stuff tends to happen all over the United States on July 4th. But this town's rural and everyone seems to know each other in the area, so everyone has a place to go for July 4th, whether it be, you know, public fireworks or a display of fireworks and a cookout with their families. Sue's family was also no exception to this, because every year they would celebrate July 4th together, and Sue and her daughter Melinda had never missed it. Her son was away for college, so this time it was just her and Melinda living in the home, her home. So on July 4th of 1995, it was no different. Her and Melinda were supposed to arrive at this cookout the family was having for food and fireworks. But her family noticed that she wasn't showing up and she was pretty late. So they tried to contact her after she hadn't shown up, and she never replied to them, never responded, and had never shown up. And Her family noticed that this was just very weird. It was very unlike them. They never missed the July 4th celebration. So, of course, they became worried. On July 5th, a mid-80s Oldsmobile was located nose down in a southern pond by a citizen of Wayne City. When police arrived, they noticed a significant amount of blood on the taillight of the car and in the floor pans, but no bodies were in the car. The way police described it was that there was so much blood in the floor pans. I mean, it was like a gallon of blood. There was an insane amount of blood. And they said that they just don't believe that whoever's blood that was had survived whatever happened to them. But of course, there was no bodies in the vicinity and no bodies in the car. Two 32 caliber shell casings were also located, and some bloody handprints were located in the trunk. What was odd about this was there was a piece of furring or wood. It's like a wooden fence type post was located near the accelerator, and it was used as a means of holding the accelerator down to get the car to drive itself into the pond. Police then did a welfare check at the Marshall home, and I'm guessing maybe that's because the family had reported them missing and the car was found, and they discovered that Sue and Melinda Marshall were not actually at their house. At the time of Sue's disappearance, it has been said that she was facing charges of possession for cocaine and had actually started working with the police to target a drug dealer. So they were thinking maybe this could have been what happened to her, why her and her daughter disappeared. Maybe the drug dealer had found out that she was working with the police and they had, you know, caused her disappearance, murdered her, something of that nature. But her family said that that just couldn't have been the case because she had been working to get her life together. She was still going to church and everything and was supposedly clean at the time. So they kind of ruled this out at this point. Police decided they wanted to interview Sue's ex-husbands, Johnny Marshall and Jim Gelsinger. And Johnny and Jim both had alibis for July 4th, and they had not been near Sue or Melinda on the 4th of July. And their alibis were obviously corroborated with friends and family that had saw them at their July 4th parties or, you know, firework shows, things of that nature. So police then proceeded to interview her most recent ex-husband, Niels Nielsen. Niels claimed that he had rode around with Sue and Melinda on July 4th when suddenly Sue's car ran out of gas. So he said he had to push it to the side of the road and go get some gas in a gas can. But upon his return from getting gas, supposedly he pulled up and there was a man in a red car who was talking to Sue and Melinda. And he said this male was around 5'11", white, and had been wearing a Harley Davidson shirt, which is kind of odd because even the police noted that how would you be able to tell that the man was around 5'11" when he was seated in a car and you kind of saw him from a distance, supposedly. And then police asked witnesses in the area, and people say they had not noticed a red car or any man speaking with Melinda and Sue. But Niels claims that the two girls got into this man's car and they drove away, leaving him there with Sue's car. On July 6th, police went to search the home where Niels was staying with his parents. And of course, Niels had given the police consent to search. And Niels claimed that he came home that night on July 4th by 9 p.m. But, you know, after being ditched by Sue and Melinda, but he could have easily snuck out again. You know, he could have, got home at 9 and then left again. So the police weren't really concerned or weren't buying it. Like, hey, you left or you came at 9. Yeah, so what, basically? So they went ahead with the search, and they asked Neil's stepfather if there were any weapons present in the home. He showed them a few weapons, but one kind of stood out to police because, one, a .32 caliber is relatively rare, apparently. It's not a commonly used gun, which I know that. I've actually never seen one. I knew they existed, but I've never seen a .32 caliber. So they noticed this .32 caliber pistol, I believe. It was a semi-automatic pistol, and it looked recently used and cleaned, but all the other guns in that area were really dusty. So police took this gun for further examination. 3 days later, on July 8th, another pond, which was about a mile away from where Sue's car had been found, was searched after a man, his 15-year-old son, and his son's friend went fishing, and they found something floating in the pond. So they found this black floating duffel bag. They didn't touch it. They just arrived at the police station to report it so that the police could fish it out themselves rather than, you know, them touch it or anything of that nature. Police located the duffel bag and they removed it from the pond, opening it to discover charred and badly decomposed remains of two people. What was left of their remains anyway. And a .32 caliber bullet was also found in the bag beside the remains. And I have seen like varying accounts of this where they say that the .32 caliber bullet was found in the bodies. And then obviously they would have been. And there was one laying in there. The bodies later had to be identified by dental records. While an autopsy was conducted on July 9th, they used, I guess the jawbones were still present and everything, and they were determined to be the remains of Sue and her daughter, Melinda Marshall. Sue had been shot twice in the head, while Melinda was shot three times in the head. Police had set up a headquarters at the Wayne City Community Center where people would meet every day to start the search for these two. And they just kind of hung out there to discuss information and their plans. So after Sue and Melinda were found in the duffel bag, Niels had driven past this community center multiple times on a daily basis, taunting the family, yelling insults, obscenities at them. And one time, Sue's 19-year-old son, Michael, was outside and Niels pulled up and proceeded to, you know, make comments. And Michael confronted Niels. And when Michael kind of leaned his head in the window of the car to confront Niels, he noticed that there were some tools he was missing in the back seat. So Niels had stolen Sue's son's tools. And so Michael went into the community center. He reported this to the police. He filed a report officially, and police later were granted a warrant to search Niels' parents' home again for the tools. So the first time they had apparently Niels' verbal consent or oral consent, as far as I know, and the second time they actually went to get a warrant for the tools. And while there, they located Michael's tools and they found a large fire pit near the trailer containing human teeth. Sue's jewelry and her keys were also found, and some furring matching the furring that was held on the accelerator of Sue's car. So they found these boards there at the trailer that matched the same board that was found in Sue's car that was, you know, holding the accelerator down to send the car into the pond. Neil's neighbors did report that there indeed was a very large fire in that pit on July 5th. Niels was finally charged with the tool theft and he was held in prison, but police kind of rushed to gather significant evidence to connect him to the murders. And they only had about 48 hours that they could legally hold Niels to do this. So they were really, you know, trying to find something to connect him to the murders. Niels was interviewed again where he was pretty uncooperative. He told police that Sue had stolen some random man's wallet a while back and maybe this man was mad and so he could have killed her. He was just kind of making things up. And of course he waived his right to remain silent because he held his hands over his ears and started saying, nah, 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 you know, I'm not listening. So once he had spoke, once he had done that, he kind of waived his right. So he had made a noise. He had spoke. Since police couldn't get much out of him, they decided they were just going to let him take a break and walk around this barbed wire fenced area outside of the prison grounds with Officer Blake Adams watching him. And Blake Adams knew Niels previously, so Niels kind of got comfortable with Blake. He was talking to him, and he began to tell a story to Blake Adams, who actually encouraged him, look, go tell the police assigned to your case. I'm not assigned to this murder case. You know, I'm not involved with it. So you need to tell the investigators that you were just speaking with what you're telling me. So Niels went in and he talked to the police and he claimed to police that he did actually not kill the women, but he did help dispose of them for Sue's ex-husband, Johnny Marshall. Johnny had been a very loving father to his children and no one believed that he would actually kill his own daughter, Melinda. Niels stated that he had been riding around with Sue, Melinda, and Sue's ex-husband, Johnny, or Melinda's father, when Johnny suddenly became angry when he found out that his daughter, Melinda, had been pregnant with his child. So there's allegations here that Johnny was sexually abusing his daughter, Melinda. He got her pregnant, and he became really mad when he found out that she was pregnant. Niels said he exited the vehicle after the sexual abuse allegations. He was kind of done with that conversation, apparently. And when he got out of the vehicle, he started walking and Johnny drove up to him again and he showed him the dead bodies of the women. He had apparently grabbed Melinda and Sue by the hair and shot them both in the head and asked Niels to help dispose of them. So they placed the bodies in Sue's car, put the furring against the accelerator, and they drove it to a pond. But the car didn't sink. So Neil said he would burn them in his fire pit at home, which he did because Johnny threatened him. So when they, I guess, disposal of the bodies didn't work out the first time when they went to the pond, Neil claims, oh, I'll just take him home and I'll burn him in my fire pit because Johnny had threatened him, apparently. But police didn't buy the story about Johnny either. And so they had enough of a confession to officially arrest Niels for the murders of Melinda and Sue. It was determined that Johnny did indeed have a solid alibi at this time. And he had absolutely nothing to do with the murders. And he had absolutely never sexually abused his daughter, nor was she pregnant. According to the autopsy results, Melinda was not pregnant. Niels Nielsen was tried for 2 counts of first-degree murder and concealment of a homicidal death, facing the death penalty. So at first they had 6 counts of first-degree murder on there. And then whenever he was convicted, it was dropped down to 2. Prosecution fought in court with evidence of pieces of Melinda's hair, human bone, blood, and the jewelry and personal items found in the fire pit. They also had the gun that was confiscated at Neil's parents' home, even though Neil's stepfather claimed that Neil had not even had that gun the night of July 4th. His stepfather and his mother, however, did admit that Neil did leave with Sue and Melinda the night of July 4th to go watch some fireworks. Neil's mother testified that Sue's car was sitting at her home for a few days after July 4th as well. People who knew Neil said that he had been trying to rekindle the romance between he and Sue, but he had been claiming that Sue had played mind games with his emotions and even sold a car that was his car or it belonged to him. The night of July 4th, there was a firework fair thing, and Niels was telling people, well, I might never see Sue again, things of that nature. So it was a little weird. A fingerprint had also been found on the bloodstained vehicle that matched Niels. It was located on the gear shift and was the only print that matched Niels, even though there was 8 prints in the vehicle. And of course, none of the other seven matched Niels or Johnny, but none of them matched Johnny. Witnesses provided a solid alibi, like I said, for Johnny Marshall. There's just no way he could have done this, and he wouldn't have done this to his daughter, they say. During the trial, testimony was also given about Neil's criminal history, which had been significant. When he was just 12 years old, he held a knife to a 6-year-old girl and he threatened to kill her. He had a history of being a violent criminal already. Prosecutors theorized that on the way to the fireworks show, Sue and Neil's had some sort of fight, which resulted in him shooting her and Melinda, since witnesses say he did attend the fireworks show alone, presumably with their bodies still in the car. He waited until the next day to burn and dispose of them, and he attempted to sink Sue's vehicle in the pond. Neil's trial lasted for 10 days through, I think, the end of May and June of 1996. When the jury returned the verdict, Neil spit on prosecutors, swore at the judge, kicked over a table, and he even was flashing obscene gestures, probably flipping people off, things of that nature. The judge eventually kicked him out of the courtroom for repeated violations of courtroom etiquette and violent outbursts. He was not present in the courtroom for the announcement that he had been found guilty and sentenced to death for 2 counts of first-degree murder and 2 counts of concealing a homicidal death. So when the judge announced guilty, he started acting up and got removed, and then the judge announced that he was sentenced to death. Upon appeal, Nielsen argued that the trial court erred in denying his motions to suppress evidence and to suppress statements. They also erred in holding the capital sentencing hearing in the defendant's absence and erred in admitting irrelevant and prejudicial evidence during the second phase of his capital sentencing. The state made improper arguments during the second phase of his capital sentencing hearing. One of the capital sentencing jury instructions is confusing. The trial court erred in imposing extended term prison sentences for the concealment convictions, and the Illinois death penalty statute is unconstitutional. Niels claimed that the initial search of the burn pile exceeded the scope of his stepfather's written consent, and the warrant was issued on basis of information obtained during the initial search. The family's trailer had sat on about 20 acres of land, but they maintained only 3 or 4 and rented the remainder to the Neff family for cultivation and cattle fencing. The burn pile sat approximately 150 to 175 feet from the trailer, but it sat on the boundary line. Neil's stepfather was asked why he did not place the burn pile closer to the trailer, and he stated that it was a fire hazard and a sanitation issue. The Neffs testified that they farm the Lathrop's land and they access it via a dirt lane that runs along the southern boundary of the Lathrop's yard, and they're free to come and go as they please. So yes, it's owned by the Lathrop's, it's rented by the Neffs, And I believe that what Niels was trying to get at in court was, well, the burn pile is actually on the rented property of the Neffs, but you have to remember that they had this agreement that the Neffs could farm it and everything of that nature and go on it, but it was still owned by Niels' parents, so it was still in their name. Meryl Neff testified that on the afternoon of July 6th of 1995, while riding his tractor, he noticed a garbage fire burning in the vicinity of the burn pile. Terry Neff also reported seeing the fire, and he said that this was definitely not a garbage fire. It was a lot bigger, and that the smoke was just dark black, and it was rising in a column of about 4 to 5 feet across. So it was a very big fire. At this point, Neil's appeal was denied, and it was noted that George had implicitly consented to the search of the burn pile orally to the police. So he told the police, sure, you can search the burn pile. And then later when they obtained the warrant, it was valid. It was a legal warrant because the first search they did was legal, in legal means. Niels Nielsen was set to be executed on November 16th of 1999, but his execution was stayed pending his appeals. So in 2003, however, Illinois Governor George Ryan actually commuted all condemned Illinois prisoners' sentences from death to life in prison. So Niels no longer faces execution, but at this time, all of his appeals have been denied and he is ineligible for parole. Sue's sister gave an interview in 1996, which covered her ongoing pain and suffering related to her sister Anith's death. She stated, quote, "It can happen to anyone. Murder has to stop," end quote. All right, everyone, that concludes this episode of It's Crime Time. If you could please rate and subscribe on Spotify or whatever platform you get your podcast, that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you all for listening. Happy holidays, and until next time.